This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez. You may not be aware of it, but the organization known as the WEF, or World Economic Forum, has an undue influence on the governments of the Western world, even the United States of America. Whether it's policies concerning climate change, the depopulation of nations, draconian vaccination mandates, unrestricted immigration, social media censorship, eliminating cattle farms, reducing nitrogen levels in soil through restrictions on farming, fending off mass starvation triggered by the previous two policies through the eating of insects, and ending representative government in favor of ruling elites, the wellspring for these nifty ideas comes from the minds of the WEF's deep thinkers. It doesn't help matters that the organization's founder, Klaus Schwab, speaks with a thick German accent reminiscent of a mustache-twirling James Bond villain, or that he sometimes wears a costume reminiscent of a uniform of the Klingon Empire. So, what are the results of WEF policies being implemented in the West? In Holland, the Dutch government passed draconian climate change proposals designed to reduce nitrogen levels in the soil. It mandated the purchase by the government of family farms and the destruction of 30% of their livestock. Farmers protested these drastic measures on behalf of dubious climate change by blocking major highways with their tractors. Dutch outrage culminated in the election of 15 candidates from the Farmers' Protest Party to Parliament, and later, the selection of populist Geert Wilders of the Dutch Freedom Party as Prime Minister. In Germany, the largest nation in the European Union, farmers displeased with climate change tax policies emulated their Dutch neighbors by clogging thoroughfares with, what else, tractors. If Germany follows in Holland's footsteps, it's only a matter of time before Germans express their anti-WEF attitudes at the ballot box. Klaus Schwab addressed this pushback to the WEF's global agenda, even here in the United States, to an assembled group of fellow Bond villains.
We face the backlash of millions of people, particularly in the West, who feel that globalization is not working. And for this reason, what we have seen in the elections in the United States, in the Brexit vote, this anger of people against globalization and against the elites, which they feel have profited from globalization. People in some parts of the world are angry. Facts do not anymore count. Fake news may become more important than realities. If you look what's happening in the United States, particularly, you have this anti-system movement. What we are seeing is a revolution against the system. So fixing the present system is not enough. Now, there is, of course, an anti-system, which is called libertarianism, which means to tear down everything which creates some kind of influence of government into private lives.
Clearly, globalists are concerned a populist America First leader will be in the White House soon. Israeli historian, author, and WEF member Yuval Noah Harari thinks so. In an interview with Stephen Bartlett on the podcast The Diary of a CEO, Harari said,
"Are you concerned that Trump might be elected again
shortly?" I think it's very likely. And if it happens, it is likely to be the kind of like the death blow to what remains of the global order. And he says it, openly. Now, again, it should be clear that many of these politicians, they present a false dichotomy, a false binary vision of the world, as if you have to choose between patriotism and globalism, between being loyal to your nation and being loyal to some kind of, I don't know, global government or whatever.
The anti-globalist movement here in the United States has everything to do with American freedom, independence, and self-rule. Our Declaration of Independence specifically states the only legitimate government is one that rules by consent of the governed. This fundamental principle of American self-rule is the real bone of contention for globalists. Alex Soros, the jittery and stammering son of shadowy billionaire George Soros, said as much while speaking at the WEF.
We just heard this point about untrustworthy people, and we talked about things in the United States like checks and balances, which aren't written anywhere, but are customs. And one man, Donald Trump, literally came in and just took that all away.
Notice how Soros speaks of American checks and balances, but says they aren't written anywhere. They're merely traditions. You see, he's not talking about restrictions placed on government power as specified in the U.S. Constitution. Rather, Soros speaks of so-called traditions or understandings reached between U.S. and European elites. That is what Trump and MAGA populism threaten. So what happens when a populist head of state enters the lion's den at the annual WEF conference at Davos, Switzerland? A year before the stolen 2020 presidential election, President Trump spoke at Davos to a less than enthusiastic crowd. What Trump told the assembled global elites was not what they wanted to hear.
America's newfound prosperity is undeniable, unprecedented, and unmatched anywhere in the world. America achieved this stunning turnaround not by making minor changes to a handful of policies, but by adopting a whole new approach centered entirely on the well-being of the American worker. Every decision we make on taxes, trade, regulation, energy, immigration, education, and more is focused on improving the lives of everyday Americans. A nation's highest duty is to its own citizens. A pro-worker, pro-citizen, pro-family agenda demonstrates how a nation can thrive when its communities, its companies, its government, and its people work together for the good of the whole nation.
No American elected Klaus Schwab or his neurotic band of bug-eating, CO2-obsessed, micromanaging elites. The populist rage now building in the U.S., though no one will say it out loud, is due to the Biden administration's adopting the goals of the World Economic Forum. The administration's refusal to increase the issuance of domestic oil exploration leases to combat imaginary climate change has led to a dramatic rise in energy prices, which has increased the price of every service and product. The likely election of Donald Trump for a second term as U.S. president will represent a very public middle finger thrust in the face of the Teutonic totalitarian system espoused by Klaus Schwab and his fellow jet-setters. It also signals America's second Declaration of Independence and revolution. The irascible 19th-century American painter James McNeill Whistler, who famously said he excelled in the gentle art of making enemies, wasn't known for taking criticism graciously. He famously sued London art critic John Ruskin for writing that Whistler's dark abstractions were the artist's way of, quote, flinging a pot of paint in the public's face, unquote. Ruskin's description did not apply to Whistler, but it certainly does to tax cheat and presidential offspring, Hunter Biden. The crackhead became an artist around the same time news stories began surfacing about his and Uncle Jimmy's business of selling access to U.S. Senator and then Vice President Joe Biden. Congressional committees would later subpoena Hunter's bank records, discovering millions of dollars had flowed from business partners in such faraway places as China through 20 Biden family-owned shell companies, with a portion of the cash eventually landing in Papa Joe, the big guy's checking account. Hunter obviously anticipated this and quickly arranged another scam to keep the money rolling in. And voila, Hunter was an artist. This raised suspicions among some in the press. They wondered if Hunter's gallery masterpieces provided other means for selling access to the man now president of the United States. Hunter's new flimflam was so ingenious, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki announced the new Biden pay-for-play scheme to the press.
The selling of his art will all happen through the gallerists, and the names and individuals will be kept confidential. We will not be aware, neither will he be aware.
Is there anything stopping anyone from directly telling, though, Hunter Biden that they're going to purchase his art? And if they do, the American people won't know who they are.
He will not know, we will not know, who purchases his art.
You see, the White House wanted the American people to believe Hunter and the big guy did not know the names of those purchasing the art. And so, no conflict of interest existed. That's when Hunter's magical works began selling for around $500,000 a pop. During a Capitol Hill hearing in late 2021, GOP Representative Ken Buck of Colorado asked U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland if Hunter's sudden artistic success was suspicious, considering the prices earned by sales of great 19th century painters you may have heard of.
Mr. Attorney General, I'd like to direct your attention to the easel behind me. The first painting is a Claude Monet. It is listed at Christie's for $700,000. Now, Claude Monet was the founder of the Impressionist movement. The second painting is a Degas, another world-renowned artist, and this painting sold for $500,000. The third painting, you may recognize this name, is a Hunter Biden.
I don't recognize the painting.
The Hunter Biden painting sold for $500,000 also. Now, you may think that such an exclusive, that when Hunter Biden is in such exclusive company, that he would have a background, you know, artistic training, for example. But you would be wrong if you thought that. And you might think that he had some sort of apprenticeship with a world-renowned artist. But you would be wrong again if you thought that. Or perhaps that he has been selling his works for years and, again, unfortunately, you would be wrong. It turns out that in 2019, Hunter Biden couldn't find a gallery to list his art. And what happened in 2020 that changed all that? His dad became president of the United States. Now, a single piece of art from Hunter Biden sells for more than the average American home. This art arrangement is so suspicious that the Obama administration ethics czar, Walter Schaub, tweeted on July 10th of this year, Hunter Biden should cancel this art sale because he knows the prices are based on his dad's job.
Recently, Hunter's Manhattan gallerist, Georges Berge, testified to Congress that Hunter knew the names of his patrons because, well, he told him. Berge said the non-disclosure agreement as described by White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki never existed. According to the New York Post, quote, the art dealer testified that Hunter, 53, knew who bought about 70% of his art, including Elizabeth Hirsch Naftali, who obtained works by the first son before and after scoring a prestigious presidential appointment, unquote. Naftali's purchase of Hunter's amateurish doodles earned her a cushy appointment to the Commission for the Preservation of American Heritage Abroad. It's clear the White House lied about Hunter's continued sale of access to Daddy Joe. All one had to do was purchase childlike splatters by Hunter to earn an appointment to a cushy, high-paying federal position. Republican Representative Matt Gaetz asked Attorney General Garland if Hunter's actions passed the smell test.
How can you guarantee that the people buying that art aren't doing so to gain favor with the president?
Job of the Justice Department is to investigate criminal allegations. You have information.
Are you investigating this? I mean, someone who bought Hunter Biden's art ended up with a prestigious appointment to a federal position. Doesn't it look weird that he's become this immediate success in the art world as his dad is president of the United States? Isn't that odd?
I'm not going to comment about any specific...
Not going to comment, not going to investigate. So right. Hunter Biden associate Devin Archer told us that Hunter sold the appearance of access to then-Vice President Biden. Are you confident he has stopped doing that?
I'm going to say again that all these matters are within the purview of Mr. Weiss. I have not interfered with them, and
yeah,
I do
if
not...
if you were confident that he had stopped, you could
And I do not intend to interfere with him.
That begs the question. How many Hunter Biden finger paintings does Attorney General Garland own? What art critic John Ruskin unfairly said of painter James Whistler most certainly applies to Hunter Biden. His paintings are a pot of paint thrown in the face of the American public. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.